Hello, everyone. Welcome to a documentary podcast. I am Josh.
And I'm Catherine.
And we are the podcast of two filmmakers who talk about documentary films.
Yeah.
Shocking. Shocking.
Yes, I think people know what we talk about now.
That's good, because it would be shocking if they didn't. So today's episode, we're covering three films by the same filmmaking team. I think there are variations on the director, but there's one constant.
Mm-hmm, the photographer.
Yeah. So
Edward Bertansky? Is that?
Yeah, and then Jennifer Beishwal.
Yeah.
Is also in every film. As she's in every film as the director, I guess. So
Yeah,
how have you been?
I've been good. I've been watching a few more documentaries, more than normal. And then we talked about a little bit on the last episode that I've been running a lot, so. Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So what have you been watching? What are your recommendations for today?
I don't know if I'd recommend it, but South by Southwest is putting all their full-length documentaries on Amazon. Mm. So I watched My Darling Vivian. I don't know if I would recommend it fully. I think because we've been watching so many like ethnography films, anthropological sort of films, that this one's structured a lot more like classically.
Yeah.
And so I got a little bit bored just because it was presented quite up front. And then I would recommend, though, to go with some of the films we have been watching, Citizen Jane, Battle for the City. And it talks a lot about urbanization, and I think it plays really well into the films we're going to talk about today.
Mm. That's awesome. Yeah, so...
It's about Jane Jacobs, if... Yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I'll have to check that out. Yeah. On my end, I am going to... Well, there's a series that just came on Netflix called Trial by Media. Mm-hmm. And they kind of go into like some really famous cases, but ones that like maybe we've kind of forgotten about, and kind of just talk about the effects that the media had on those things. So the first episode was about this guy who murdered someone for taking him on the Jenny Jones show. And then they just kind of dive into like the truth of it, and it's really good. It's really engaging. Mm. And then the other one is a kind of a mixture of like reenactments and documentary, but it's a History Channel one, and it's kind of terrible, but also amazing at the same time. But it's called The Food That Built America. And it's just kind of about like the origins of like Coca-Cola and Hershey's and, you know, all these different huge companies that are kind of ubiquitous now. And I think it's really interesting and engaging. I kind of started binging it last night and stayed up way too late. So, and I ended up putting off watching Watermark, which we're talking about today, because I got so into So I had to watch Watermark this morning because I stayed up too late watching this History Channel documentary.
Good thing is they're not too long a film, so.
Yeah.
I think they're all like an hour and a half each, so yeah.
Yeah, so with that, let's get into kind of the Anthropocene project.
Yeah, so with their third film, the filmmakers came out with the Anthropocene Project, and it's a multidisciplinary body of work from the collaborators Nicholas Pensier, Edward Bertansky, who's the photographer, and Jennifer Beishwal, who's the director. And they combine art, film, virtual reality and scientific research to investigate human influence on the state, dynamic, and future of the Earth.
The exhibition, which debuted at the Art Gallery of Ontario in Toronto in 2018, showcases traditional photographic prints, murals with film extensions, film installations, and AR installations to create a dynamic expression of humanity's incursion on the planet.
So this project has gone on to show in Antwerp, Malmo, and Bologna. And within the project, they also came out with a book that, through photographs and poems by Margaret Atwood, documents humans' destruction of the Earth on a huge geological scale. And you can see many of these images from the book in their film Anthropocene, which will be the third one we're talking about.
Yeah, so let's just get into the film, starting with Watermark. This documentary from 2012 brings together diverse stories from around the globe and explores our relationship with water and how it shapes humanity.
Yes.
So with that explanation, what did you think about this one?
I was actually a little bit disappointed. This was the one I was looking forward to the most, just because I have a huge fascination with water and would love to one day make a film about people's interactions with water. I love the opening shot. It was very expansive, just showed the power of water, but I don't think it had like a clear direction, whether it was about like humans' experience with water, conserving water. It just kind of felt a little disjointed to me with the cuts. And I have seen some other documentaries of water, one called Aquarella, which I was really impressed by, and I think I'd recommend that if you wanted to watch a documentary about water over this one.
Yeah, we talked about, I remember you talking about that film, but with the music being kind of the one gripe about it.
That was the one, yes. The screamo music halfway through was a little bit much, but that one I think encompassed a lot more about the power of water and humans existing within it, whereas this one I think kind of lost its way throughout the middle.
Interesting. Yeah, I think this might be a film I need to go back and revisit, because for me, visually and the way they did the interviews, this might have been my favorite of the three in some ways. But I do think that I didn't come away with like a clear like thesis. Which I think I might appreciate, because it's pretty visually stunning, and it does just seem to be a presentation of different ways we interact with water.
Yeah.
Because there's like the really beautiful scene of like that, you know, that huge place where people bathe in India, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then there is another scene of, you know, then there's like all the dams, and then it's just the way we interact with water. I just thought it was interesting, but I don't know exactly what was trying to be said. Some of it's pretty obvious as far as like, you know, the ways we're using the Ogallala Aquifer. Hey, look, there's a kitty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the ways that we're draining the Ogallala Aquifer, and then the, and then when they had the native person talking about, he's just talking about water. I mean, and the ways that it cycles. And I thought it was really beautiful. But yeah, I see what you're saying. I feel like the beginning was a lot more interesting than the kind of middle.
I think I do agree with you. I liked a lot of the interviews they included. They seemed a lot more personal and weren't just from the photographer's point of view. There was different themes I did enjoy though, like the one about sort of the privilege that certain classes in certain countries have with water. Like whenever they would show the ones in the United States, they'd show like the Las Vegas fountain with people watching, and then like surfing and people's homes with pools. Whereas like when you would go to India or Mexico, you have the drought of the Colorado River. And then like the scene you're saying with like people bathing in the water, it's a lot more what's the word, like spiritual versus like excess that we have here.
And actually kind of the funny thing is I think my favorite part of the whole movie was the end credits. Like not saying like I was glad it was over, but I just really loved that kind of moving. That's like a drone shot that I think is really well done, which I'm pretty critical of drones a lot of times. Just because, especially because of YouTubers and stuff, they're so overused. But I thought that that was like a perfect way to use one.
Yeah, I think he uses it very well to capture like the landscapes he's trying to portray. Like it's more for the composition than it is to be like, look at me, I'm using a drone.
Yeah.
Sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the same, that's the one thing I appreciate about these filmmakers is also just the way that they do a lot of stuff that I feel like is overused, but they do it in a way that's like so good. Mm-hmm. Just like the drone and the slow motion, and I feel like every time they choose something like that, it seems like very purposeful and like they're really trying to convey something, and it helps paint a picture, you know, of the place that they're examining.
Mm-hmm. I think it is partially because the project's driven by a photographer, and in this one and in a lot of other of the films we're going to talk about, like you see his process and him like like through the printing process being like, I want more red in this and this, or like more blue here, and I think photography is the point of these films first and foremost, and I really actually appreciated that in a way, just because the images were so stunning.
Yeah, totally. But I think I like the way they also do the interviews. They just feel they're not like so talking headsy where they have to be like throughout the whole film and over every single shot and just like hammering away their points. I like how they just kind of like, you know, pop in and and then they will interview somebody and then they'll go off and do this whole like, you know, very intentional kind of like different shots, and I don't know. It's, I like the way that it was done in that way.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. I don't know if I even have much else to say about this. I think it's worth watching.
Definitely.
It's really beautiful. I love the music in it. Some of the scenes are just like kind of really show how silly humans can be with, with the things that we build. And then also some show just like how interesting, like human ingenuity is, I guess. And then some just show our beautiful interactions with water. And I think it's just kind of I hate to overuse the word portrait, but it just feels like a nice portrait of just our relationship with water.
Yeah, and in my notes, I'd always write portraits of landscapes. Like, that's kind of what they get at.
Yeah, it's almost like if a landscape photographer were to make a film, that would be this film.
And that's what it is.
Exactly. And I think that's a theme that we're going to get into in all of these films. So you want to move on to manufactured landscapes?
Yeah. So Manufactured Landscapes from 2006 is the first, actually, of the series by Bertanski and the team, and it reveals the gritty underside of industrial landscapes as they travel the world observing changes in landscape due to industrial work and manufacturing.
Yeah.
So I'll say this one was definitely my favorite of all of them.
Yeah, I think this one is... I remember seeing this when it first came out, and I don't... It was like the first documentary I saw that was kind of like this, as far as like, you know, not just being like an issue film with like graphics that pop up and like, you know, Al Gore's up there, like giving you charts and graphs and going like, oh, I'm from, you know, I don't know, whatever. It was like the first documentary I saw that was really this type of film that we generally talk about and try to make. And I just remember having my mind blown, just like, oh, you like look these shots of like the people in the factories and just all of the ways that like humans try to dominate over nature in industrialized production.
Yeah, that first shot where they're just like tracking through this factory, like first thing I noticed was like the symmetry and balance of the shot, and that's when I knew like, oh, this is going to be another one of these good ones where just the compositions stand out. But it's just like expansive, it never ends, and you're like, how? Or like, part of me also was impressed that like humans are capable of making these things like throughout the film. As much as I'm like, we need to save the environment and need to be careful of industrialization, it is quite amazing though what humans are capable of creating.
Yeah, one of the things that I really was wrestling with is this idea of like, you know, technocrats or technocracy or whatever. Mm-hmm. And just thinking about these huge things that humans have built. And it's kind of funny. It kind of ties in with the Foods That Built America documentary that I watched last night, of all these huge companies like Coca-Cola and stuff. And Hershey's, like, when Hershey's started out, like, he was trying to do something, like, he was trying to treat his workers well and build a company town that had, like, actually, like, running water and electricity. And, like, and he was always like, oh, we got to keep our workers happy. And I feel like humans can build these things so altruistically in a way, mm-hmm. and then just completely lose sight, you know, of our effects on the world, and it can spiral out of control. And I feel mm-hmm. like a lot of the things in manufacturing are really, really beautiful ingenuity that went into it and creativity to be able to feed the masses and to clothe the masses and, you know, just like produce these things on such a huge scale so everyone can have access to them.
Yeah.
And at the same time, we're destroying the earth and, you know, making our planet less habitable. But it gives me some kind of weird hope when I see these kind of things, because I think about when we're in a crisis like we are in now, or with like climate change, you know, capitalism isn't going to be the thing that saves us, but ingenuity and creativity is, you mm-hmm. know. And I feel like if we can like meet these challenges the way that like capitalists met the challenge of like feudalism, you know, if we can move beyond capitalism and build something more sustainable and more equitable, then I feel like humans, we have that, we have the knowledge and we have the creativity to do it. And these kind of portraits of like manufacturing and stuff like that really like prove that to me. Even though they're awful, like what they became, I feel like mm-hmm. it's kind of a stepping stone to what we could be doing.
Yeah, and like speaking on like what makes you hopeful, like at first it was really hard to watch because until like 3/4 of the way through the film, you don't see any nature. And finally in one interview when they're talking about the dam, there's like one tree. But the other focus in the film when they're talking about like coal and oil, because this is from 2006, I believe, we've now shifted a lot in using green energy. So it's kind of cool to see that like, you know, 14 years ago, we were worried about too much coal and gas. Whereas now there's a lot more renewable sources being used. Mm-hmm. So it's cool to see how there's been a shift in that as well.
Yeah. That is really cool. And it's really interesting because, I don't know, this film also reminded me of a film that came out recently that I hated that I hope no one watches. But I will mention it because I think it's so evil in the way that like it's so dishonest, but it's a free film that Michael Moore produced and they put out called Planet mm-hmm. of the Humans, and it is demonizing green technology, saying that it's not like good enough, and that I don't know, it's shock, it goes into all these right wing talking points of solar not being able to produce enough energy and they're using footage from like a decade ago with old solar panels. Like we've moved so far beyond that.
Yeah.
And scientists are saying that we can actually produce enough electricity for the whole world through solar and wind. And so
that's frustrating.
Yeah. So, you know, Michael Moore like threw a wrench in the environmental movement with this anti technology film. And I think that that's just wrongheaded. You know, we need to like embrace green technologies, but in a way that is equitable and democratic.
Yeah.
And less capitalistic. And so when I was watching this film, it, you know, reminded me of how much I hate this other film. And I hope no one watches it. Like, I think 5 million people have already watched it on YouTube, but it's the dumbest. I couldn't even get through it. I was so pissed off. And like, now I've just like written Michael Moore off. Cause I don't know, like maybe I just had some romantic feelings about Michael Moore because like, he's kind of the reason I got politicized. But just this film is so stupid. It just makes me wonder how much other stupid stuff he...
I think that's hard because, like, we need a starting point. Like, anything's better than what we have. And so it's like, yes, solar or wind may not be perfect, but it's like you have to start somewhere. And that's what I enjoyed about this film, whereas instead of presenting solutions, it just presents what we're doing to the environment to sort of make us question, like, oh, if we destroy it, I think they even say this, like, we're destroying ourselves. Like, we're very tied to our earth. And if that's gone, we're going to be gone too. And so it's like, oh, we need to start thinking differently. It doesn't provide the solution, but it starts to put it in your head, like, what can we do differently than we were doing now? I did find a lot of the film, though, like, very dehumanizing to workers. Like, in a, I don't know if it's a positive way, but, like, in the compositions, a lot of the people fit into the machinery, and it's like, what are we doing to humans? Like, they are becoming machines. They're not being treated properly. And it shows also, like, the toxic and dangerous conditions everyone's working in. So it's not just the environment. It's, like, what we're doing to people as well. And it's really sad to see some of the conditions people are working in. And they don't seem to mind or realize that it's not, shouldn't be acceptable.
Yeah, I think that it's interesting because that first shot where they do go through the you know, manufacturing place and you're seeing all the workers there. And I know what you mean. Like, it's not in a good way, but it is in an honest way. And that's how industrialized that's how capitalist companies view their workers. They're just part of the machinery. They're just part of the profit producing, you know, base of the company. And I think it's becoming like, it's an interesting time to watch something like this because I feel like so many people have 30 million people have been let go of their jobs or something close to that or more, actually probably more because unemployment doesn't actually like, you know, count everyone who lost a job. It's only people that applied for unemployment, but we're at like something like 30 million people who have lost their jobs. And I think that there is a awakening right now where people are seeing how companies view them, you know, that they are disposable. And a lot of these like companies, like, I mean, look at the stock market, you know, like 30 million people lose their job and then the stock market's like doing really well because people are buying shit on Amazon. Like, it's crazy to me. And I think that there's an awakening right now that and this is like one of the things about understanding class in general that Marx was talking about, you know, back in when industrialization was first starting to happen, that at our jobs, we're not viewed as human beings, we're assets, you know, or we're just production machines. And this film does a really good job at like showing that. And I think that the time that we're in now is also one where we're realizing that because, you know, companies are letting people go without pay, furloughing workers, laying off workers. Like, it's never like the CEO is like, oh, I need to like, you know, Jeff Bezos isn't like, oh, maybe I should take a cut in my pay and give all my workers a raise, you know?
Well, it's sad. I read yesterday he's potentially going to be the first trillionaire soon. It's insane.
Yep. It's crazy. But, you know, hopefully with films like this, you know, people can watch it and see that and help move along that idea that if we're going to have a more equitable society, we should own our work. You know, we should democratically we should organize our companies and our businesses democratically, I guess.
But it's hard to see like some of these images and realize like how we can go forwards by going backwards, if that makes sense. Like some of this stuff is so big and so ingrained already, like it's going to be a lot to revert to sort of how it used to be. Like the thing I noticed a lot was like urbanization, which they show at the end with all these high rises in Shanghai and how the city's becoming more geared towards young people and people are just gonna be living in these giant high rises. Like that's never going to, I don't think, going to change with like population increasing people. And they say people will be living in cities like that image. I don't think we will be able to shift necessarily. So it's like, how do you then, like you say, make it more equitable, make it more environmentally friendly for people to live in these giant monstrosities in cities?
Yeah, and I think that that's where we have to embrace technology, but not in a capitalistic way, in a democratic way, because we need to, like, you know, build, you know, upward integrated farms in skyscrapers if we can, or, you know, whatever. We need to switch to all renewable energy. We need to change our transportation system. So it's not really about going backwards. We just, I don't think that we can do that. And if we do, it's going to lead to like gnarly civil wars and, you know, it's going to be crazy. And that's why I hate that film that Michael Moore did so much, is like, it's about how we need to have less people and we need to consume less. And this is just leading to like eco-fascism instead of
like you look at the one child policy in China, like that didn't work at all and is having like negative effects today on their population. You can't go backwards.
Yeah. And then they kind of touch on that in Watermark too, with the rice farms, you know, when the kids at the rice farms are like, this work's hard. I don't want to do this. I want to move to Beijing.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty interesting because, I mean, I feel that too. I mean, I grew up in a small town in Texas and my dad was a carpenter and, you know, then I was like, I'm moving to the city as soon as I was old enough and I'm going to live in apartments, you know?
Yeah.
So we should probably move on to the last film, Anthropocene.
Okay.
So finally, the third film in the series is a cinematic meditation on humanity's massive reengineering of the planet, narrated by Alicia Vikander of Ex Machina fame, which is a great, great movie. It's not a documentary, but maybe one day it could be.
So yeah, by the time I got to this one, I just more of used it to enjoy the imagery of it. Like, I didn't take as many notes just because a lot of the themes become a bit repetitive and a lot of the, I guess, what it's trying to say. But I do think of all three, it's the most beautifully shot. Like, they've learned from the past ones and it's the most, I think, well-produced in a way.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I didn't rewatch this one since I watched it like a month or two ago, but this one definitely, and I feel like all of these films, like I honestly didn't take notes on any of them because I feel like the ideas were so big, you know, there wasn't really much to write down. And they're all kind of similar themes as far as like being just about our relationship with nature and these machines that we build. And this one like is very beautifully shot and there's some really disturbing stuff in there. Like I remember there's something where they're like doing mountaintop removal and there's this giant machine that just like is like tearing through the earth and I don't know if I've ever seen an image of that machine before.
It's I think the largest machine in the world.
It was insane. Like an
excavator?
Yeah, the excavator, that's what it was. Yeah. That thing is crazy. And there was something just really disturbing about that to me. Like, what the hell are we doing?
Those shots so crazy. Like, that one, at one moment, I'm like, oh my God, how are we able to build that? That's incredible. But then also in the same shot, you're like, look what we're doing to the Earth. If we can build something that big that can destroy the Earth, we're really going to cause some insane damage that will not be reversible.
Yeah, and that's the insane thing about all of these. It's like we come up with all these like creative things, even with Watermark, where we move water to go farm in deserts, and then, you know, but at the same time, we're, you know, drying up rivers in Mexico, you know, yeah. like the Colorado is like gone in Mexico.
Yeah.
And it is, I feel like a lot of, like every single one of these films is really about this, like, it's like this awe of like these things we've created mm-hmm. as humans and how big the effects that we're having are, but also how disturbing that is because there's so much power there.
Yeah. And I guess back to like the creative thinking, if we're capable of making this insane machinery, then like you're saying, maybe we're capable of like coming up with more resourceful ideas, you know, using that creativity for something else, because these man-made things are incredible. Well, not for the environment, but for engineering. So what else can we engineer on like the same level, like same caliber, but that's way more productive to humanity and the earth?
Well, I think that does it for this episode of A Documentary Podcast. You can find us on Instagram at A Documentary Podcast.
And then our website, adocumentarypodcast.com.
And you can find me on Instagram, which if you're... We're doing Instagram live right now, so you know it's at Joshua Labure.
And then I'm using a different Instagram account for live, but like my photography ones is at CMS Moments.
And if you have any suggestions, email us at adocumentarypodcast@gmail.com.
And next week, we're going to switch it up. Less meditative anthropological films. We're going to be doing the Beastie Boys documentary and then the Wu-Tang
one. Which is so good.
I haven't seen
the Wu-Tang one yet.
I haven't seen either yet, so I'm looking forward to some lighter content.
Yeah, there's a the Beastie Boys one made me cry.
But oh, wow.
It is funny and really heartwarming, but, you know, one of the Beastie Boys passed away, so when they talk about that, it was emotional. But the Beastie Boys documentary is beautiful. I wrote a review for it for a local magazine called High Omaha.
Oh, cool.
They're coming out with like a tabloid, like, you know, like a zine type thing, but like it's really beautifully done. But anyway, I have a review. I think in this one that's coming out, I reviewed The Hottest August, which we talked about on the last episode. And then in the next one, I did a review for the Beastie Boys doc, just because I was supposed to do a different one. And then when I watched the Beastie Boys one, I was like, I have to write about this because it's so good.
Great.
All right. We'll see you guys in a couple. Well, actually, we've kind of been doing weekly, so we'll see you next week.
Yeah, and thanks for listening.